Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Handyman Success Podcast. If you've been with us for a while, then you know that our mission is to teach and to inspire by having a great conversation with our guests. So teaching you practical, actionable business tips from how they run their business to inspiring you that you can have hope for a better future for your business, whether you want to get started, whether you're already started and just don't really know what to do next, or if you already have a successful operation, maybe you can pull some inspiration on how to improve things and take things to the next level, whatever that looks like to you. So thank you all for joining us. My name is Jason Call, one of the co-hosts. I'm the owner of Handyman Marketing Pros. We do websites and SEO for the handyman industry. I'm here with my co-host, Alan Lee. He is the owner of Honestly Handyman Services in Sacramento, the actual CEO as of the last few months, just doing sales and marketing while the business runs itself. He's also the owner of Handyman Journey Business Coaching, an awesome, amazing coaching group for the handyman industry. I've personally been blessed to be a part of that and to kind of share in the awesomeness that's happening within his coaching group at the Handyman Journey. So today we are with Logan Lawless with Lawless Home Improvements in Charleston, South Carolina. Logan, thanks so much, man, for being with us. If you don't mind, give us a little snapshot of who you are, where you're at, and kind of where you're at in the business right now.
Yeah, so my name is Logan Lawless. I'm the owner of Lawless Home Improvement. We're located here in Charleston, South Carolina. We kind of have a wide travel radius here, so we're all over the state, kind of the county, I guess you could call it. Business-wise, things are super busy here. There's a huge population of people, and so it seems to be endless with work. We have huge aspirations, and right now we're kind of in a point in our business where, we're trying to figure out what's next. And so I'm super glad to be here and happy to share my story.
Awesome, man. Let's see. So kind of a little bit more laying of the land here for our listeners about your business. If you don't mind sharing, if you have any particular focus in your home improvement business, whether it's small jobs, remodeling, kind of just give us an idea of your services. And then also, if you don't mind sharing too, kind of like revenue wise, like what you're looking at this year or like last year, just to kind of give us a little like painting of the numbers too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we kind of specialize, in the beginning of this year, we were in one part of our business, and now I've kind of moved to a separate part of it, which in the beginning, we were more focused remodels, doing, kitchen remodels, bathroom remodels, facelifts. But now I'm more gearing towards the small handyman jobs, which when I say small, I don't mean like, just a picture hang or anything like that. We do, vast variety of projects, if you want a cabinet built in, drawer fixed, pretty much anything, you name it. But I'm trying to get away from that massive remodel projects, that eat up a lot of time. So as far as revenue goes, man, it's been a journey. So when we first started off, 3.5 years ago, I remember my first year, we were shooting at around 50,000 for the year. And this last year for 2022, we actually wrapped up a little over 500,000 in net sales. After my profit, after all that, I probably made a solid 80 after supplies, paying the guys and that sort of thing. And then this year I'm projecting actually to take a small loss of about 400. We're going to do about 400,000 this year just due to that, cutting back on the remodels and trying to approach life differently than we were as far as the business goes.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Okay. Thanks for sharing that. What were the kind of the main reasons for the shift? Because obviously, bigger jobs, that's typically less revenue, but it could be higher profit margins, maybe a little less stress. If you don't mind kind of sharing your thoughts of making this transition.
Yeah, absolutely. So the main thought behind it all was honestly my family. So, you can make more money, but you can't make more time. And so back in April, I had a baby, I have a 3-year-old, and I didn't get to see my 3-year-old grow up. I started my business, height of COVID. That's when he was born, July of that year. And so I missed his entire baby stage, up till he was about 3 years old. I wasn't home. I was working till 2 a.m., on projects, just doing what I thought was the best thing for our family. In reality, I was just, separating us further apart. And so this year I kind of made the decision to, hey, let's step back. I want to really work 8 to 5 or 8 to 4, you know, job site 8, leave by 4. No, you know, and no exceptions. If, you know, the next day I have to come back and finish up, that's what I do. And so mm-hmm. that's kind of been where I've been at. And so, and it, honestly, it's been the best thing I could have done, you know, as far as my relationship with my wife, my relationship with my kids. You know, I pick them up from school every day. I bring my massive 7x14 trailer into their little daycare parking lot. And I pick them up and all the kids love it. And so it's exciting to be able to be, you know, part of the family life again, instead of just work. So that was honestly the reason for transitioning into the smaller jobs, primarily. So
that's fantastic. And so when you say we, do you, I assume you have employees. How many employees do you have? What does your team look like?
So here's another bomb dropper. So along with my shift and change, I actually did let go of all my employees. So we had, you know, I had an office manager. I had two field service techs who were transitioning between doing remodels with me. And then, you know, when we get the smaller handyman job come in, they would go off and do that. And so I had another decision to make was, you know, do I keep pushing forward strong or do I step back and reevaluate? And so, you know, I spoke with them and, you know, unfortunately we had to let them go. And I decided just to clean slate everything. You know, we were losing some profit over the summer and realizing, you know, I'm just losing cash flow like crazy. So that was another decider, like, hey, something's got to change. You know, you see the money coming in, but, you know, the money going out was far greater. And, you know, so you think you're making money, but really it was just like a false thing, you know. So I really had to step back and just say, hey, you know, where am I at in my business? Where do I want to go in the future? And it's a marathon, not a sprint. So there's no rush to become the multi-million-dollar guy or, you know, have to have the nicest of things yet. I can step back, raise the kids and reevaluate the future where I want to head. And that's what I think I'm going to do.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I want to commend you. I just want to like shout out like awesome job, like kind of being honest with yourself and like prioritizing your family. It takes a lot to kind of make that realization, you know, especially when it comes to letting people go. One thing that a mentor once told me that has always stuck with me is that, a huge, like our life in business, especially is largely defined by really hard conversations. Like there's usually just a couple really pivotal conversations that need to happen to make massive change in your business and in your life. And, you know, having those conversations with your team and making that shift and having to let them go, that's just such a hard conversation to have. But ultimately, it's what's necessary to kind of, you know, get you to where you want to go. So anyway, man, I commend you for that, because if you keep avoiding the hard conversations, anyone that's out there, if you're thinking in your heart right now, like, oh, man, you know exactly the hard conversation that needs to happen. You know, we encourage you that if that's where your heart's calling you to, you're one hard conversation away from really breaking free into where you want to go.
I appreciate you saying that. Definitely.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how long have you been like solo now? Like, when did you let your employees go? And how long has this kind of new life been?
Yeah, so honestly, it's been a month. Yeah. And so, you know, and I still maintain those relationships with the guys, you know, like one guy, I hooked him up with a friend of mine who does pressure washing and painting. So he's now working there. Another guy, he actually started his own handyman company and is a solo venture now as well. And so, you know, I've been happy to share leads with him, you know, give him tips and guidance, you know, even if he doesn't want it, you know, he can always know that I'm here as this help. Because, you know, the last thing I want to do is create, you know, an environment where someone can't feel like they can approach me or, you know, I firmly believe you give what you take. And so I want to give as much as possible. And that's my kind of my contribution, even though I had to do something he didn't like, but hopefully I could, you know, help him in the future with this project.
So yeah.
That's cool, man.
So, but before we launch like too far into kind of where you're at and where you're going to go, what's some of the story of why you started up in this business and like what kind of compelled you to get going?
Yeah. So to be honest with you, you know, I had no knowledge of the handyman world prior to this, you know. I like to say I used a lot of YouTube and a lot of grit, and you just pushed forward with it. But, you know, it started back in 2020. I was working, well, I was doing maintenance, so it's not like I was completely oblivious to, you know, fixing things. I did apartment maintenance back in the day, that sort of thing. But I was working for Charleston County doing, you know, maintenance for the buildings, the public buildings. And COVID hit, and man, it came at us hard. I was already, you know, super in debt, you know, always looking out my windshield or my my window, checking to see when the tow truck was coming to our apartment to tow my car away. You know, my wife and I barely could afford rent. And then we found out we're having a baby, and I just knew something had to change. I literally was going to the grocery store, and, you know, it always crossed your mind, like, do I just walk out with these groceries because I have no money to pay for them? And so when you're in that kind of position in life, you know, you can either do two things. You can sit back and say, it is what it is. This is my life. It sucks. Or you can push forward and make a difference, you know, become something different. And that's kind of what I did. You know, I started just videoing myself, hanging pictures around the house and, you know, putting it on Facebook. Hey, let me come hang your pictures for you. And, you know, next thing you know, people are sharing it. And so here I am, you know, just left my job at Charleston County. And I just dove head first in a little Kia Soul. And, you know, I drove that thing to the ground. I'm telling you, though, I built wooden racks for the top and, you know, 40-foot ladders on top of it, the clean gutters, driving down the interstate. It looked ridiculous, but, you know, I knew something had to change. You know, and I remember getting that first check for like $200. I think I lost all the money I made that day on that job. Still thought, wow, I made $200 today. And, you know, it really opened my mind to what this business can do for you. And if I can be encouraging to anyone is, you know, you don't have to be the guy that's very technical. You don't have to be the guy that researches every single thing and know every aspect of business before you do it. I honestly jumped in, you know, got my license, jumped in, and had no clue how to run a business, and probably still don't, but that, you know, every day we're learning and we're trying to grow. But yeah, it was a hard journey. You know, I got very fortunate, you know, my parents are realtors here in the area as well. And so we were able to start jumping in on, you know, closing repairs for realtors. And the word spread pretty quickly. I mean, COVID, at least here, really helped the handyman world where people were just sitting around looking at their walls and that sort of thing. And so we stayed pretty busy, and it, you know, it was a real blessing, but yeah, I mean, it was very humble beginnings for sure. There was not a glamorous, you know, truck I had or trailers. I was very, very much, you know, in debt and needed money ASAP. And so desperation really pushed me forward. But that was, you know, that was kind of my beginnings, was, you know, really hard times and just a lot of willpower. Which is what it takes sometimes.
Man, yeah, that's an inspirational story right there.
Yeah, I got tingles, man. Whatever you said, the grocery store, like, that's just some raw, like, human stuff, you know?
It's
like,
real. Like, yeah,
that's, I mean, real. Extremely- yeah. Yeah. And with the Kia Soul, was it?
Yeah, Kia Soul, yeah.
So if any of our listeners, you got an excuse about a vehicle getting started, man, you just heard it from Logan. Like, you can make it happen. Custom rig on top of the Kia Soul, man. I would. Yeah. Do you have pictures of that?
I do. Yeah. They're actually on my Facebook page. You might be able to find some.
Okay.
I'm happy to send them over to Alan on Messenger. But yeah, it was just I used, what did I use? Molly bolts to the roof rack. Like, I think I even went through the roof to wrench down 2x4s so I could strap a ladder on top safely. It was pretty, it was sketchy to say the least, but, you know, it got people's attention with my little magnets on the side. And, you know, eventually I was able to make the leap to a full size pickup and trailer and push, you know, full ahead. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I almost miss it sometimes.
Yeah,
man, that's awesome. And definitely send me those pictures. I'll put those on this video. So if you guys are listening to this on a podcast platform, head over to YouTube and watch the video, because I'll put those pictures up here on the screen. That'll be awesome to see.
Yeah. Super cool. It's very interesting.
Well, hey, this kind of ties in. You mentioned, posting some photos on Facebook of you hanging pictures. So if you don't mind kind of sharing like your marketing journey, like how you started marketing initially and how that's evolved to like what you're doing now to bring in clients.
Yeah. So really, honestly, my marketing scheme was just post every single day. Everything you do, everything that you touch, make a post about it. Like I said, that's kind of how it started. Was I took pictures of me hanging pictures. I even had my wife video me loading groceries into my car saying, I'll come load your groceries. But really, I mean, you just got to talk to people. It's, you know, it's a people business and you have to network yourself. Even if that means setting up outside of Lowe's with some business cards on a little table out of the trunk of your car, I mean, you have to do whatever it takes to get a job. I know there's a lot of avenues you can go as far as Google and Yelp. And I mean, everybody and their brother wants you to pay them to advertise on their platforms. And really all you need is you. I mean, I have a kid that I use. I pay him $18 an hour just to go hang door hangers for me. And I bought 400 of them for, $75, something like that. And he goes through all the neighborhoods and he's got a little map and he hangs them up. But really word of mouth has been primarily my only way of advertising. I think I've paid for advertising twice my entire journey. And it's just truly been word of mouth. Do good work for people and they'll spread the word. And it's true. I'll get calls from people I never met saying they knew someone that I've never met that referred me. So, that's kind of been the game. It's just word of mouth. So wish I had better advice for it, but that's really been it, pushing myself and giving cards out wherever I can, even at the gas station while you're pumping gas, look over at the guy and give him a card, but that's been it. Yeah.
That's awesome. Fantastic, man. You got some insane determination. And I think that's really something that I think fuels, success is like, we got to do this, because like 1 week, you're not sure if you can afford groceries. And it's like, well, we got to do this. We got to bring money in. And I think that's really the point where, you start becoming, you start creating different ideas of, how can we bring more calls into our business? And I think that's fantastic. So that's pretty awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
One thing that I noticed too, initially, I couldn't find your Google profile. And then I ultimately found it with like 32 reviews. Just I see that there's like a second one that has two reviews. So
I'm not really sure what it's about.
So I just a quick point, not to divert our conversation, sure. But I definitely recommend closing that two review one down or folding in the other one. I think Google's getting a little confused because there is two of them, which is probably why I had a little trouble finding it. But obviously what you've done with word of mouth and quality of work, it's a great place to get started. And you're just a testament to the grit, if you will, of starting a business and kind of hustling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, you got to have that. Man. Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. So one thing I'm super passionate about and interested in is pricing. And I know that when we were talking before this podcast, you had said that someone recommended the Handyman Journey Mastermind group to you on Facebook and you're like, I don't need that. I know how to price. I'm good. Do you mind kind of walking us through your pricing journey? Like, how did you figure out how to charge when you first started out? And then maybe go into, after joining the Handyman Journey Mastermind group, did you change anything? Did anything in your mindset change in regards to pricing?
Yeah. So pricing, when I first started off, I didn't know that I was worth it. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So,
it makes sense. I've been there.
I've been to it extremely hesitant, you're at the job and one thing I was doing was quoting on the spot. So I'm looking at the customer in the eye and they're saying, so how much? And you just say $50 and you didn't think about it. You didn't do anything. So my first month or two was bringing home, $25, $50 checks to my wife and she's looking at me, what the heck did you do? honestly, my starting out pricing, I didn't use any resources. I didn't try to. I was so arrogant thinking, wow, I got this, I can do this. And so I honestly just threw numbers out, not knowing what anything cost. Oh my gosh. But leading up to now, pricing is honestly, it's kind of straightforward. Once you've done it enough, you can almost you just know what a job costs, what it takes. And so it kind of varies. I've gone back and forth on pricing, whether I started off with an hourly rate and I basically just times that by, you know, how long I think the job will take. And then I'll usually give me a little buffer room, which is like an hour or two extra. And I'll give that entire number to the customer. And that I'm always inclusive on my materials. So whatever number I give them, that includes every material they need, unless they say, hey, we have the fan or what have you. But everything I give is always inclusive. The numbers are there. So like a deck that includes all the lumber, screws, et cetera. But yeah, I don't really have the best system to be like the most, the best guy to learn from on it. But really it's just experience that kind of led me to where I'm at as far as pricing goes. Mm-hmm. Figure your baseline number, of what gets you the hourly rate that you need to make a living. Mm-hmm. You have to really think about your expenses and, your car payments, your house payments, what's going to get you the bottom line. And then you can figure out what you need to make money from there. So it took me a little while to figure all that out, but we finally got there. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's great, man. So did joining the mastermind group on Facebook change your thoughts on pricing or anything like that? Or you still just do it the same old way of trying to just figure it out?
Yeah. So it did change a lot of things actually, because like I was saying with the expenses and figuring out, what everything costs, that, what it costs to live in your house. It's stuff I never thought about before. And then I got on the Handyman Masterminds group and all these guys are asking these questions like, so what's your hourly rate? What's your car payment each month? And I never thought about all this stuff. Like, who cares? It's just job's worth $200. Why would I charge more? And then the group actually made me realize I'm missing out on a lot of money. There's so much more I could be charging, not because I'm greedy, but because it's fair. And what I need to actually live. And that group, yeah, definitely. If you just read some of the comments on people's posts, you'll realize real fast that maybe you're not doing everything the best way possible. So it's definitely helped me for sure. Yeah.
So whenever that's you give awesome. Someone a price, like you estimate about how long it takes, you've got your kind of back end hourly rate. And then you get factor in materials. I guess a couple questions for you here. I'm going to load it up. Do you give them just one price? Do you break down, labor, materials, or is it just one thing? And then also, piggybacking that, is there any kind of system or CRM that you use to help facilitate the process?
Yeah. So, in regards to the first question, I'll break down, say they want, a ceiling fan hung, they need a cabinet hung up, an outlet repaired. Then I would actually break those three line items as separate jobs per se. And then each one would have a price. So, but each one would include all the materials. So if say they go in and they're like, well, I don't want to do the outlet. You're charging $150 for the outlet. Let's not do that today. Then they'll choose the other two items and we'll proceed from there. So I don't give them like one lump sum, everything included. I'll do it, for one price. I will actually break down each item that we're doing and then give them a separate price per item. And then all the materials, are included there. I use Marquee actually. It's funny enough, I just watched Alan's video the other day about switching over to, Service Fusion or something like that. Yeah. And, so I started looking into it and I was like, dang it. I just bought, Marquee. And I was like, I'm not switching right now, but I love Marquee. Especially if you're starting off and the price point is amazing. I mean, I think I paid $40 a month. And the value it's bringing me and just the reports I can access, and those different things that you never thought of. Like my wife was trying to create all these spreadsheets and, between QuickBooks and Marquee, I think you'll have everything you need. But it's made it very uniform. I've had people tell me, wow, everything looks extremely professional. Like I remember back in the day, you just text me a price and, or try to email me something with a weird letterhead on it. And, and so now, sending things through Marquee and just keeping that everything, tracked in there, it just really helps you stay organized, not forget customers. Because how many times you forget a customer and they're texting you 3 weeks later, like, hey, I never got that bid. But if everything's in your system, it's all in place. So
right.
I would say CRMs are definitely important. It doesn't, find one that matches your needs, but you know, for Marcate, for me right now, has been a blessing and amazing. So I love it. Yeah.
Sweet. It's so funny you mentioned that, because and then I got a question for Alan too, just to compare a little bit. But we have customers that they'll use Marcate, they'll use Jabber, they use Housecall Pro, they use, you know, Service Fusion, whatever it may be. And I see so many people switch between them all, and they'll switch back. And so ultimately, it's about finding a system that works for you, that you can get along with. Because everyone, my experience, you know, we serve quite a few people that you could always find something that you don't like about it. And then you switch to something else and like, oh, I really don't like this part more than I don't like this part for the other one. And so ultimately, it comes down to finding a system that works great for your business, that you're happy with. And so I guess I just share this to say, no CRM is perfect, and it's about finding one that you can make work that you're happy with. There is no such thing as a perfect CRM that's going to satisfy your every single need 100%. So anyway, Alan, he mentioned breaking out prices by job, and I don't think we've really like kind of dove into that at all, like as far as the outlet, the fence, you know, whenever you have a, because you guys focus on the honey-do list, multiple items, because your minimum fee is like, no one's going to pay about $200 to come and change an outlet. Well, you know, maybe a really ideal client would, but do you guys break out by the actual job, or you just give them one price for what they've kind of laid out for you guys?
Yeah. So we break it out. It's all, you know, line by line. So one line would be replace ceiling fan. One line would be replace outlet. And then you have the materials for each job. And then at the very bottom, obviously, there's a total on the estimate. But that's how we do it. I have talked to a lot of people that they just give, you know, one price. Like they have a whole, like one line would say replace ceiling fan, replace kitchen faucet, replace front door. And then it would have a price there. And that would include labor and materials and everything. You can definitely do that. You know, we opted to kind of be more transparent. That's particularly why we do it line by line, but so there's many different ways to skin a cat, like you said. And, you know, to the example of just like a CRM, right? A CRM, you got to use what fits your business, what works well for you. There's certainly things that I love about Marcate that Service Fusion doesn't have. There's things I love about Service Fusion that Marcate doesn't have. You know, there's nothing perfect, you know, and same with estimates, right? There's pros and cons to itemizing everything, and there's pros and cons to not. So you kind of just got to do what works best for you, for sure.
One other question that's really frequently asked, I already know the answer from Alan because we talked about this, but Logan, do you mark up your materials? And also kind of something that we've talked about that I'd like to start asking more is, do you have any kind of mileage charge, especially because you are a little outside of kind of your primary service area? And if so, is that something you communicate?
To be honest, yeah, we do have a markup on the materials. You know, when I first started, it was just hand you the receipt, pay me back. And then I quickly realized that's not the way, you know, because you're out there shopping for people. So, yeah, honestly, I mark up all my materials at 30% at least. And then on top of that, I'll add like an extra 3% for any credit card fees that I'll accrue during the, you know, transactions if they pay with credit card and what have you. So, in all, you know, the total bill is marked up 33%, you know, with the material cost. So, yeah, we do mark up that. As far as mileage goes, I've only had one incident where I've charged mileage, and that was, we were going, you know, 50 miles plus to do a remodel on the beach. But now, I mean, really, the traffic just sucks, honestly. So it's not like they're far. It's just takes 2 hours to get there. And so I've been battling, you know, someone's 10 miles away, but it takes an hour and a half because of traffic that, you know, what can you really do? You know, you're like, hey, it's a mileage charge, but we're 10 miles away, you know? So, you know, I looked at Lowe's and, you know, Home Depot sites where they talk about, you know, 20 miles over, they'll have a fee. And I've kind of tried to implement something like that, but, you know, really everyone's been within 20 miles. It's just takes forever. So I haven't really had a system in place for that yet. And I haven't really thought it through, to be honest. It's just one of those things where I don't know what to do actually. So just because of that whole traffic's just bad, but they're still, you know, relatively close, just not easy to get to always. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love it, man. We implement a mileage charge, and that basically just covers things like gas and time and all that kind of stuff. And what we currently have it set at, I think, is $2.52 per mile. We definitely need to up that because we haven't upped it in probably 2 years. So we definitely need to raise that. But it's a good little supplemental thing just to cover the cost of getting from our shop or our location to their location and back. So
is that on the estimate as well? Like, do you put that on there?
Yeah. So on every estimate, we add two things to every estimate. We add a miscellaneous materials fee. That's usually 10, 15 bucks based depending on the size of the job. And that just covers miscellaneous things like, you use a quarter tube of caulking or some tape or, razor blades, whatever it is. And then we also put in their mileage charge. And basically that's a simple thing. We have that built into our items on Marquette for $2.52 per mile. And then we just plug in their address on Google Maps from our shop and get the mileage and plug that in there. And it does the multiplication all by itself. So that's a pretty cool little thing that, it helps out. Every little bit helps because at the end of the day, you have to fix your vehicle when it breaks down. You got to change the oil. You got to put gas in it. You got to put new tires on it. And, your vehicle has wear and tear on it, and obviously build some of that into your pricing, but also having a mileage charge helps offset some of those, minor fees that will come up occasionally.
Absolutely.
I mean, Logan, go ahead.
I was just saying, they do come up too. Your vehicle break down.
Just a thought that I have for listeners is that if you aren't accounting for those little things, they add up over time. So even if you look at maybe miscellaneous mileage, all these different things per job on average, let's just say it's 20 bucks, over 100 jobs, you're looking at $2,000. So however long it takes you to get that 100 job mark, that really adds up. And also $20 upcharge for mileage, miscellaneous, whether you have it as a separate line item or bake it into your pricing, it's pretty marginal for your ideal client, an extra 20 bucks to cover all these different additional things. So I love that Alan does a really great job at being transparent and looking at his numbers and doing that. Overall, it's just money that ultimately you'd be way less profit, or not way less, but you certainly would be bleeding out a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. And I know that people will ask, as they do every time I talk about it, is do people complain about that? And we've had very few people complain about mileage and miscellaneous charge, because there's always going to be people that do that. Like, what is this charge? But by and large, probably 98% of the people that we work for understand, it's like, oh yeah, you use razor blades, razor blades are fairly common. You use pencils, all these things that, they degrade and you need to replace them. So they understand that. And they also understand the mileage, but there are occasionally you're going to get people that are like, wait, you want me to pay for you to drive to my house? What are you, crazy? And ultimately, that's a good sign that person's not your ideal client anyways. It's so true.
Logan, question, man. What do you do operationally to be more efficient, save time, whether it's a system, just something, a hack that you do? If you can kind of share anything that you're doing to kind of maintain proficient or efficiency, improve profitability, things like that.
Sure. So I approach each job, when you're doing the estimate, that's also your time to create your materials list. Because even if you're going in and not knowing they're going to accept the job, you need to know that, what you're coming into. So I use those estimates as times to kind of put together my materials list prior to the job, assuming they'll accept it. So that's kind of one step. And then the second step would be to, pre-purchase all your materials the day before, the best you can, so grab everything you can that you think you'll need for that day, and keep plenty of stock on your vehicles. Where you lose efficiency, at least in my opinion, is when you have to go to the store. You're in the middle of the job and you go out of the truck and you're like, oh, I only had one tube of caulk today, and you got to go 20 minutes to go to Lowe's, or Home Depot. And that, ultimately it's an hour, no matter what. Even if you're next door to Lowe's, it takes an hour no matter what. And so you got to think you're losing that hour right there. And so that's one of the, pre-planning the job out and kind of doing the job in your head before you even start the job that day will save you immensely. save you on time. Imagine what's behind the wall. If you're opening up a wall, what you might find, and just go ahead and buy everything. You can return it, you know, if you don't need it.
Yeah.
And so I try to just buy in bulk everything I think I need that day. I'll grab every plumbing part if I have to, and rather return it the next day, you know? So, that's kind of one of the parts of efficiency that I try to do. Yeah.
That's cool. That's good. I think one follow-up question to that I've had, because it's come up a few times. So when you purchase materials, do you purchase all that like through your bank account, or do you have a credit card, or do you have Home Depot credit, or like, what does that look like, buy all that material for you?
Yeah. So, you know, over the past 2 years, we've had business credit cards that we've used. And more recently now, I'm trying to actually get away from that. Just due to the fact that you'll rack them up, but then it's a lot harder to pay off. You think you'll pay it off and you won't. And so I've gotten away from the credit cards, and now we just strictly, you know, we try to purchase the materials strictly based off of the deposit. So we take a deposit, and I truly just try to charge, you know, what the material cost will be, maybe a little bit more for, you know, a day of labor or something like that. But, you know, other than that, I just try to stay with my bank account, my debit card, my debit card through Wells Fargo. I try not to dabble into lines of credit. What I found is that I was terrible with it in my teens, so I'm just as bad now. So I'm not going to get into the credit cards anymore, and just, you know, moving forward, I'm only using my cash out of my bank account. So I do now. Yeah,
cool. That's good to understand where your weakness is, because like when we first started out, we were horrible with credit cards too, you know, where you would buy all the materials on the credit card and then you'd be like, oh, I'm going to pay it all off. And then the money's not there or whatever it is. And we got a few months behind one time, and finally we decided to pay it off. And now we still use a credit card. So we buy all of our materials on a credit card, but we're like, we have it set to auto pay every single month. So it automatically pays the whole bill every single month. And we just have to make sure that there's money in the account. And it's also been really cool, because we've been able to, like, you know, you accrue points and all that stuff. So you can, like, actually, at the beginning of this year, I took all my family to Disneyland, you know, off of credit card points. So that was pretty fantastic. But you definitely have to be strict about it. So I know a lot of people are like, how do you do that with, you know, materials? How do you, you know, upfront all the costs? So one option is credit cards, but definitely know your weakness, like you said, Logan. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm the same with credit card points as with Alan, because we use that for, you know, travel or whatever, like personally for the family, which is super sweet. But Logan, we just met, man, but you've got a superpower of like self-awareness, and most people know what they're good at and they lean into that. But like, it is just as important, if not even more important in some circumstances, to know what you're bad at or what you're not confident in. And so kind of having that awareness and like cutting the credit cards. So I commend you for that, man. I actually came from banking before marketing, and I worked as a teller through college. And really short here, like a part of our job was selling credit cards. And I told our manager, like, I cannot morally do this, because I see how most people use them. Maybe 25% use them well, but 75%, they're paying 25% interest every month, and it's just killing their finances. So anyway, man, it's good to know what you're bad at. Question I had is, as far as like your estimating, do you always give an in-person estimate? Do you do it virtually? Is it a mix? If you do in-person, do you charge for that?
Honestly, so back to the efficiency thing, you know, we're all so busy. And now that it's just me, you know, I try to kind of, we 90% of my phone calls out through the phone via pictures, you know, hey, can you send me a picture of X, Y, and Z, and, you know, and, you know, I'll give them a base price from there and say, hey, when we come out, it could be different, it could be less. So I always tell them that plus or minus price. And so I try to do an in-person estimate. I firmly believe when you come out to a job that you're going to win more bids. You know, over the phone, it's like shopping around, you know, asking for pest control. How much does your service cost? $99. All right, I'll call the next guy. And so, but when you're in person, you know, they get a feel for who you are. You know, you show up, you look professional. It's your time to shine and separate yourself, right? So I try to do as many in-person estimates as possible, but I can't always get there. So Yeah,
it's certainly a balance. I know this conversation we have quite a bit as far as like the there's value in person, because you can sell your price and your value, because if you're above market rate, which most, you know, we always advise people to be above average in their market. You know, you can sell a lot of that value from the experience that you're giving someone right out of the gate, because they have confidence like, oh, man, this is the guy. Like, look how professional of an experience this was. But, you know, the downside is it takes time. So one related question, too, that came up in the Facebook group recently, just curious how you approach this, is say you give an estimate and you get there and you uncover something that is going to make the job take longer. So say it's like you open up the drywall and you're like, oh, shoot, you know, this is going to take me an extra like 3 or 4 hours. Like, have you had something like that happen before? And how do you approach those situations?
Yeah. So hold on one second, plug in my iPad. But yeah, honestly, it happens. I mean, 8 out of 10 jobs. I mean, you're going to rarely do show up to something and it's just is what it is, you know, face value. So I think importantly, you know, first thing you need to do is just stop, right? Look at the situation, evaluate it, and speak with the customer. Like, look, you know, I was coming here to patch your drywall and I saw moisture back there. You know, this is something we need to approach. I can't just close the drywall back up and leave water behind your wall. You know, it could be nothing, could be something. So that's kind of my first thing I do is I just stop, call the customer if they're not there. If they are, you know, document your whole process. Take pictures of everything you do. Back you up yourself. But so I approach it by I stop what I'm doing, look at the situation, talk to the customer. If hey, it's 4 o'clock, you know, if it's not an emergency, I'm already rescheduling the job I had for tomorrow. And I'm going to be there first thing in the morning to take care of them because that's what I said I'm going to do. So, and I found that most customers, you know, even if you had a job for tomorrow, they're going to understand. Like, if it was their house, they would want the same treatment. And so just being honest with people, you know, don't try to lie. Don't try to be sneaky. Just tell them the truth. You know, it's a bad situation. It's going to take a little longer. And I found that to be the best advice you could do. You know, don't try to rush it. Just if you have to take tomorrow to do it, you have to take tomorrow to do it.
And I don't want to assume, but do you charge for that extra amount of work that's needed to get the job done right?
Yeah. So I did fail to mention that, but yeah, when we talk to the customer, that's when we're going over, hey, you know, I don't know the full extent yet, but I just want to tell you there's going to be a price increase, you know, from our original bid. Mm-hmm. Say it was $200 drywall patch, you know, now it could be, you know, $500. We're not really sure at this time. So, you know, we ask them how they want to proceed. You know, do they want to get other bids, someone else to come out and take a look? Or do they want us to keep digging in? And, you know, a lot of times I've rarely had anyone say, I'm going to call somebody else because you're already there. So we go ahead and just tackle it. We give them the price. And a lot of times I'm really fair with them because they didn't know it was there. And that's not my time to kill them. I'm trying to make as much money as possible. I'm there to be a service to them. So I try to look at it that way as well. You know, it's not, don't get greedy with it. Just be honest with them and hey, it's going to be a little bit more money. So that's kind of how I approach it. Yeah.
Love it. Love it, man. So, you know, you used to have employees. What's your kind of goal now, or what's your idea of kind of what the future looks like? Are you going to stay a one-man show for the foreseeable future, or are you hoping to kind of hire people next year, or what do you think that looks like?
Yeah. So honestly, I'm just soaking in being by myself again. You know, I found it, you know, it's no offense to employees, you know, everyone has a role, but I honestly got tired of babysitting a little bit on the phone all day, every day, from customers to the guys. Hey, we don't have this. You know, how are we going to get it here? And that was my every day, all day. You know, and I'm at home feeding the baby, and it's 5 o'clock, but the guys are still working, and I'm sitting there with a phone in my ear, and it's so frustrating. Right. And so, but at the same time, you love it. But so for the future, honestly, yeah. I mean, I'm taking it just step by step. I think. Now that I have so much more knowledge in the field and business that it's just going to excel me, you know, tenfold when I go to rebuild everything back up. So, yeah, I would love to have employees again. I'm not saying I'd ever would feel the need to be a $1 million industry, you know, multi-million dollar industry with thousands of trucks on the road or anything. But I would definitely like to reestablish and rebuild, and do it in a manner in which would be more profitable than I started, because I had no clue. So I was just hiring people. I didn't know what it took. I just calling ADP like, hey, I got these guys. And so I just took everything step, you know, day by day, just by the seat of my pants. So I would like to rebuild, but more with structure and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. That's awesome, Logan. So we're kind of running out of time here, but what kind of last or parting advice would you have for some of the guys that are out there listening? Maybe they're brand new. Maybe they're kind of in the same boat that you were in, where they kind of just hired a bunch of people and were kind of up and going. Like, what kind of advice would you have for people out there?
I would say the best advice is don't quit. I mean, every day is going to be, there's going to be a struggle each day. Even 3.5 years in, you think you know more than you did, but there's still fine things that, you know, trouble me and still keep me up at night. You know, if you're in that boat where you're just starting off, you know, market yourself, put yourself out there, and don't be scared. I mean, the worst thing that can happen is you go back to where you were at. And so there's no harm in just trying to push forward and be all you can be. Use the resources from the Handyman Journey Masterminds. You know, Alan has free coaching. I mean, there's so many resources that you can utilize, and just put yourself out there. Don't be scared. That'd be my advice. You don't have to know everything right away, but you can just tackle it head on each day and make little baby steps. That's all you need. And so that'd probably be my best advice. Just don't quit. Keep pushing forward and it's going to be okay.
Awesome.
That's it.
I've got one more question before we kind of like start closing this one out. So kind of related to what you said previously, as far as, you know, like this is the Handyman Success podcast, and success is different for everybody. They all have different goals. And as you've experienced, like maybe your definition of success, like it changes with time, right? And so calling back and kind of going back solo and having more freedom, picking up your kid from school with the trailer hooked up to the truck. So my question is, as like a family man, young family, you know, married, kids, like what has that transition been like, if you don't mind sharing, like, you know, in your home, like with your kids, with your wife, like kind of calling back and focusing on getting, you know, as profitable as possible, like really soaking in, like you said, it's just been a month of being on your own. If you don't mind kind of sharing, like, just kind of that experience of where you're at now. And I guess overall, like, are you happy with the change that you made?
So I will say this, and I full-heartedly mean it, is I'm the happiest I've been in a long time. So when I first started off, you know, I was looking at every truck on the road that drove by, you know, all jacked up, you know, with bold letterings on there, so-and-so handyman. I see them with crews, you know, you go to Home Depot and you see all these work shirts, they have guys. So when I first started, my idea of success was being known to the entire town of Charleston. To the world, you know? And so that was my idea of success, having a bunch of money, you know, cause I had nothing. So now my idea of success is spending time with my family, you know, like we got to go to the USC football game and just spending time with my wife and not stressing about everything going on with work. You know, seeing my kids, my 3-year-old is closer to me than he's ever been. You know, even at 3 years old, he knows when I'm home and present and not on my phone and, you know, not there. And then I have an 8-month-old who I'm able to hold him and feed him every night and see him just grow up. And so my idea of success, it changed big time. You know, the worldly possessions and all that were like my driving force when I first started, just like, wow, I'm making money. Like, what can I buy? And now I just want to live peacefully with my wife, man, and maybe up in the mountains. And so, you know, my end goal is just to be happy. You know, if you find yourself not happy, you need to reevaluate what you're doing and figure something else out, because that has to come first, or you won't make it far. So. Mm.
Yeah, man, preach it, brother. Preach it. That's awesome.
I, Alan's probably going to close us out here. And of course, man, I know Alan has been through a journey with his family too, and the life balance, but I just want to thank you real quick, Logan, for like your just rawness and honesty on our interview podcast here today. Cause it's been really special. And I think, yeah, I mean, you've touched my heart, and I'm just sitting here as a, you know, just part of the conversation. And so I know that people listening, it's just going to connect with a lot of people. And so I just want to thank you for that honesty and rawness and sharing your journey with us today.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Logan, fantastic words. Thank you so much for sharing all this information. And for all the people out there listening, we want to thank you guys for listening. Cause if you weren't here, we would literally just be talking to ourselves, and that might be a little crazy. So we appreciate you guys being here. We appreciate you guys being dedicated to this podcast. We launch one of these podcasts at the first of every month, so stay tuned for that. And also, if you are listening to this podcast on a podcast system, go ahead and leave us a review for this podcast. No clue how to leave a review, but find it and leave us a review. That would be super helpful. And also, number two, we would love to hear your testimonies of how this podcast has helped you out. So go ahead and go to the Facebook group, Mastermind Handyman Journey Mastermind group on Facebook, and just make a post saying how we have impacted your life here by sharing the stories of different handymen from all around the world. And we would absolutely love to hear that. And also, if you are watching this on YouTube, like this video, subscribe to this channel, and drop a comment. We would absolutely love to hear from you. So, Jeff, thank you so much. Not Jeff, sorry, Logan. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate all that you do. Special thanks to my co-host, Jason Call. You can reach out to him at handymanmarketingpros.com. And you can also reach out to me at handymanjourney.com. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. And we will catch you guys next month for a next episode of the Handyman Success Podcast.